Education Trends is brought to you by our friends at BMO Education. BMO works with higher education institutions to develop and implement income-based finance programs on their campuses. Want help designing an ISA program? BMO has you covered. Check out the link in our show notes to learn more about how BMO partners with and designs ISAs for world-class higher education institutions. And now, on to Education Trends.
After a few years of working in the private sector, Lori Heyer had a sudden realization. She discovered she never pursued her childhood dream of becoming a teacher, and so she decided to make a dramatic career shift and chase after that goal. Today, Lori is the John T. Kimber Professor in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science and the Faculty Director at the J. Hurt Hub for Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Davidson College. Davidson is a small liberal arts college, which many wouldn't naturally link to entrepreneurship, but in this conversation, Lori explains why liberal arts students are exactly the right people to be leading the next wave of entrepreneurs and how the Hurt Hub is providing new ways to bring private corporations together with institutions of higher education and the benefits of that relationship. Here's the conversation. Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today. Why don't you start us off by just giving us a quick bio? What's your name? Where do you work? What's your title? What are you up to these days?
Sure. My name is Lori Heyer, and I am a faculty member at Davidson College. I am the John T. Kimbrough Professor in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. And I am also the faculty director at the J. Hurt Hub for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. So a bit of a mouthful there, and a dual role for now in these two parts of my job.
Yeah, you got a lot going on. And I'd love to know, before we get into what you're doing, how you got to doing it. Because I feel like people's education experiences, their education in life always leads them to where they are. So tell me a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? What kind of education did you have? And how did you wind up where you are?
Sure. So I grew up in Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I went to undergraduate school there. I graduated from the University of Texas at Arlington. And after I finished my bachelor's degree in mathematics, I went to work for a local industry in the defense contracting business. And I did some war game simulations, a lot of computer programming. And for the first 3 years, that was a really fun and interesting job. I was learning new things all the time. And what I came to understand about myself is that that was the most important thing for me, to be a happy person, to find fulfillment in my work. I really needed that challenge and always be learning something new. So, with a little bit of boredom setting in, I was looking for something different, but not ready to change jobs. So I went back and got my master's degree at night. That was a pretty tough period doing both full-time job and the master's degree. But it really taught me that I was able to do that graduate work in mathematics and that, yeah, that was the kind of challenge I was looking for. And, you know, I also realized that I had given up on sort of a childhood dream or even a lifelong dream of being a teacher. And I started to think about how could I fit all these things together? And the answer really emerged is, well, I need to be a professor. So at that point, I went to another graduate school. I had done that master's at my same undergraduate institution, but I went to the University of Colorado Boulder and got my PhD in applied math. From there, I went to University of Southern California and did a postdoc for 2 years. And then came to Davidson after that.
You said when you were a child, you wanted to be a teacher. What appealed to you about that as a child and kind of what appealed to you about being a professor as an adult? Was it the same thing that was drawing you to it, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And really, I think the common theme is just a general love of learning, whether it's my own or someone else's. I love the, you know, aha moments. I love the puzzle of how to explain something in a way that maybe I hadn't learned it or might not even make that much sense to me, but that would make sense to someone else. And my brother is 9 years younger than me. And so, you know, as children will do, we played school. And of course, I was always the teacher. And that was something that, you know, was a heartwarming part of my childhood. And I think was a thread that ran through the rest of my life.
Yeah. And so that led you eventually to Davidson and what you're doing now. So tell me about the work you're doing now.
And maybe just a little bit more about like the way that I came to this job was because I was looking for a connection to a biology department and a biologist. And that was a little bit of a winding path because, you know, in college, well, I didn't even take biology in college because I disliked it so much in high school. But I discovered it quite by accident as a graduate student. I was looking for something to do for my thesis. And, you know, the thing that I wanted to do most of all had not been available to me. The person was going on sabbatical and couldn't hire me when I was ready to start a project. And really, I had to almost be forced by a friend to go talk to this biologist about a possible project. Mm-hmm. And discovered that, wow, biology now is an information science, and there's so much to contribute from mathematics and modeling and computing, statistics, et cetera, all the things that I was interested in. So I was just thrilled to discover that, you know, at that point in my life, that became my future in many ways. And that's why I went to Southern Cal for the postdoc, was to work with Mike Waterman, who was one of the pioneers in that field. And so, you know, my search for where to end up as a professor was really I cast a broad net. And the common theme was that there had to be a good connection with the biologist. So I was really fortunate to find Malcolm Campbell here in the biology department. And we hit it off immediately. We started writing a book my first year here at Davidson, which is not the recommended path, actually, for getting tenure.
Pretty ambitious, yeah.
But it all worked out, and I feel really fortunate to have found my home here.
What was the book about?
That was a genomics book. Mm-hmm. So it was the first genomics book for undergraduates, Discovering Genomics, Proteomics, and Bioinformatics.
And how was it received? Like, what was the process like of doing that? Like you said, you were in your first year. So how were you balancing kind of writing a book and also like being a first year teacher educator at Davidson?
Right. Well, yeah, I guess I'm bordering on a workaholic. I don't mind working hard. I get a lot of satisfaction out of my work. And so I did work pretty hard that first year, mm-hmm. as every new faculty member does. It was maybe both complicated and less pressure put on me by the fact that my co-author was himself on sabbatical, mm-hmm. on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And so we did a lot of electronic communication, and I could sort of take a little bit of time to get back to him with what needed to be done next. But it was a great experience. And to be fair, my part in total number of words, if you will, a page count, was quite a bit less than his, because I was doing the math and computing sort of add-ons to the biological stories that we were telling.
So tell me a little bit about what you do now, both as a professor, the kind of classes that you're interested in teaching, and also what you're doing for the J. Hart Hub for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which, you're right, is a mouthful.
Yes. And we shorten it
the Hart
to
Hub.
The Hurt Hub. Yeah. Or the Hurt Hub at Davidson, mm-hmm. is actually the proper short form. Yeah, so I finished a term as chair of my department after instituting a new computer science major, and we have also just started a new data science minor that's very interdisciplinary. So those are a couple more of my areas of interest and areas that I've been involved in administration and building these programs. And I was really enjoying that kind of work, and I have a sabbatical coming up next year. So I was looking for, and I wanted to stay in town just for personal reasons. So I was looking for a project that would have a little bit of administration flavor to it that I could do here in Davidson that would challenge me, give me new learning opportunities, as has been the theme in my life. So we just opened the doors of the J. Hurt Hub just in July, and you know, that's a year before my sabbatical was about to start, but there wasn't a faculty member really closely involved with the hub yet. So I spoke to the president of the college, Carol Quillen, about the possibility of me doing a residency, if you will, at the hub for my sabbatical. And she was really excited about that opportunity. She thought we needed it. And, oh, by the way, we really need it now. So we spoke with the dean, Wendy Raymond, and were able to work out a deal so that I'm only teaching one course per semester. And then I can spend a little bit more than half of my time working at the Hurt Hub. So this year, it's a little bit of a split personality for me to do both. And then next year, that will be my main activity. That will be my sabbatical project.
Oh, wow. So tell me about the Hurt Hub. What exactly mm-hmm. is it? What goes on there? And you know, who's coming and going there?
Right. So the physical space is actually quite large building that we have, 23,000 square feet, former cotton mill that has been rehabbed into just a beautiful space. I think when people go in, they think they're at Google or Apple or something. It's, you know, a little bit edgy, high-tech sort of feel to it. When you first walk in, there's a coffee shop kind of space. And so it's a warm, welcoming, and yet high-tech feeling kind of place. And half of that physical space, or almost half, is dedicated to co-working. So many people are familiar with WeWork. This is a similar kind of model, but this is Flywheel co-working. And Flywheel organizes themselves in collaboration with a university or college, in this case, so that they have that proximity to students and faculty, that they can build a community of not just the entrepreneurs, but also researchers and students that might be interns and be involved in some of these businesses. So the daily activity at the Hurt Hub is a lot of professionals, either solopreneurs or small businesses that are working there on a fairly regular basis. Turns out there was a big need for that in our area, and the space filled up in no time. We've got now 92 professionals that work out of the space on a regular basis.
What is some of the most exciting stuff going on at the Hurt Hub? What are the projects that all these people are working with?
Well, we've got a range of businesses, you know, from attorneys to cybersecurity firm, software engineering firm, some folks that do user design, user experience type work. We have an Emmy-nominated videographer. There's, trying to think of some of the other really interesting types of businesses. There's somebody doing materials research and materials science, just the gamut of any of startup businesses. But, you know, the other half of the space is where Davidson is really living on the daily basis and where my job is based. So as faculty director, my job is to connect what's going on that other side with the coworkers and entrepreneurs, all the professionals that work in the space, to connect that with the campus, with faculty, with students, and with the curriculum.
What does that look like?
So, yeah, I'm looking for, and we get a lot of projects from these professionals. They have ideas and projects that they're working on. They want to connect with faculty experts, or as I mentioned, they want to hire students to work on things, or just really be engaged, even if it's not a for-hire type situation, be engaged with the faculty and students at Davidson. So my role is to listen to what they need, and our general manager, Julie Goff, is primarily responsible for interfacing with these professionals to sort of the intake of the projects. And often I meet with them as well to understand at a little deeper level what it is they are looking for and need, and then think through the catalog that I have in my head of all the faculty at Davidson and all the courses that we offer across so many different areas, including some interdisciplinary and emerging fields that I can connect that idea to. And that could come in a lot of different forms. We might connect an idea to a course that already exists, or we might form a new course, an independent study, or just a completely new course that would allow the students in that course to engage with this project or this area of interest.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about how the Hurt Hub kind of goes about learning in this unique way where, like you said, like you kind of shape things to a project or you make a course work for a project. Where does that, something like that, come from, that idea? What, and why do you think it's important that, you know, there's this shift away from a more traditional classroom learning experience towards this kind of more practical, need-based learning experience?
Well, we hear from professionals all the time that what they really need is embodied by the student at a liberal arts college who also has some particular skills in an area of expertise. So what I'm hearing is that liberal arts students and you know, Davidson is a top liberal arts college, we produce students who are excellent communicators and critical thinkers. They're creative. They have a broad range of interests and expertise and ability academically and beyond. And it's that range of both content knowledge and soft skills that our students bring to the workplace that are so valuable right now. So yes, we have a computer science major, we have a data science minor, we have, you know, lots of STEM disciplines and things that people think about as, you know, emerging technology and needs in the workplace. But really, what we hear from employers is those other things are so much more important, and they can teach people some of the particular skills that they need for the job, but they need students, they need employees like our students can become. And the ideal future employee is a liberal arts student. So we wanted to have that transition very clear for students and also for the employers to be able to help students transition from their time at Davidson as students into that workplace and know that they can do it and also have some previous experience and confidence in doing an actual project.
So tell me about what the response has been, both from the employers and from the students. What has the change looked like in that respect?
Well, so we're still new at this.
Yeah, I know.
But I can tell you how
is it being, you know, how are students taking to it? I guess is the better way to ask.
Right. So I can tell you about one of the new programs that we're just rolling out that I'm very excited about. It's actually not an academic program per se. This is not one where we're connecting to the curriculum. The students get academic credit for doing a project in a course or related to a course. But this is really a separate type of program just for students. And the name of this program is Gig Hub, a little play on words in multiple ways. But we have a process by which we can intake projects that employers would like students to work on, and then a separate process to intake students who want to do these sorts of jobs. And these are project-based opportunities, so gigs.
Right.
We have the new gig economy, and we're latching on to that idea. So we're taking in all these projects and preparing all these students to do these projects, dividing them into skill pools, which are not just technology, but we have a skill pool for translations or for copy editing, copywriting, marketing, general research, all these kinds of things that go across many disciplines. And the idea is that they will be actually employees of Davidson College, which makes it very accessible to the students, and it makes it easy for the employers because they will pay a fee and pay the students by the hour, but then we just invoice them for that. So they don't go through the whole employing students and, you know, going through all the paperwork. And that's a lot of work, especially for a very small, even a solopreneur type business. We can simplify and also be in the loop to help students navigate that new experience where, you know, it's their first job. they might feel a little unsure of themselves. They might not even apply for some of these jobs if it was, you know, a full real job. But for a gig, they can branch out, they can get these experiences, test the waters, and build their confidence. So we've had great response to this. Without even marketing this to employers, we have 15, 16 projects in the queue. And these are just people who have come to us, you know, not knowing that GitHub even existed.
That's exciting.
And, now we have it on the website. So we did get a few more when that happened. We have about 30 students in the queue as well. So we are ready to start matching people up, and the employers will do standard but sort of brief interviews with the students who are pre-qualified in the skill area and hire them for whatever, you know, short period of time this project takes. We're ready to start doing that in January.
That's so cool. And it begs the question, how do you feel that programs like GigHub are going to affect higher education as a whole? Do you think those are going to be more common coming in the future, like gig-based learning in kind of the way that you're doing it?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess I hope so. Uh-huh. I think there's been a lot of change, as you know,
yeah,
in higher ed recently, and a lot of need to change and innovate to meet students where they are, to prepare them for the 21st century, the changing demographics, the changing costs, you know, everything is new all the time. So I think it's incumbent upon us, even a moral imperative, that we address these needs. And this is one way to do it. It's not the only way to do it. I think there are ways to do it in standard classes, a lot more project-based learning, for example. I think we see that in many of our disciplines at Davidson, and I think that's true nationally. This is just another way to do it that has a side benefit of growing the network, growing the community, you know, economic development. We have lots of aspects of this that are good for everyone.
Yeah. And I'm interested to hear about, in your time as an educator, as in your time in the higher ed space, what's been the change that has surprised you the most or taken you off guard, maybe?
The emergence and maybe not failure, but a lack of continued emergence of the MOOC has been a surprise for me on both ends. You know, when it sort of started, I thought, what is this all about? You know, where did this come from? Is this going to be our future? People started talking about how, yes, this is, you know, normal brick and mortar is going to go away. This is going to be all there is that survives. And maybe even bought into that narrative a little bit. But now I see that that's not the case. And that was a little bit surprising, too, that it was a little bit transient in its impact and in its domination of the landscape and the narrative.
Explain, just for listeners who don't know, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, so the MOOC, and certainly MOOCs still exist, and they're very valuable. I think we have used MOOCs in some of our classes here at Davidson as a supplement to what's going on in a class. And there's tremendous opportunity for students to learn from other people's MOOCs, to participate as TAs in MOOCs that we've run.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't dismiss them as a valuable force. But what is really essential to learning and to continuing with a program of study are those personal connections.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. What is lost in the online course kind of thing that you're getting in a classroom?
Yeah, I think there's some, it's a loss of community. The learning community is a real thing. And yes, you can replicate to some extent online, but it's important to have that in-person aspect to your learning process and to share it with someone. You know, if you can't go have coffee or sit in the dorm room and debate what it was you learned in class that day, there's just something lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of jumping off that, what's one innovation that you've seen happen that has had a profound impact on education? What has kind of caught fire and changed the way things work?
I would like to say that technology is one of the biggest changing forces in education that really has taken hold, and it's not ever going to go away. We're still trying to figure out what are the best uses of technology. I'm experimenting all the time in my classes with new ways to deliver information. For example, just this semester, I used Slack. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh,
it's
a
professional level tool. Yeah, I couldn't live without Slack.
Yeah, on it all the time.
My own professional life is very much embedded in Slack. And so I introduced that to my students this semester, and we used it instead of a traditional LMS. We used it instead of email. You know, we used it in a variety of ways that turned out to be more powerful and more interesting than I even imagined when I started the class. So, you know, that's just one example of what I think is a whole array of possibilities that as the younger generation comes who grew up with technology, we will see more and more. That's a force that is powerful when it's used well.
Sure. In addition to GigHub, what else is going on at the Hurt Hub that you're excited about? What are you personally excited to be working on, and what's getting buzzed about?
Well, there's so much. You know, I'm really excited about the growing opportunities to connect with the curriculum. We've had a few courses per semester now for a few semesters that are really meaningful connections that faculty are gaining from as well as students, and certainly the external partner in this scenario. So we call it R&D2, research, data, and design, but you know, it's just the idea of, and this is in lots of institutions around the country, the idea of a sponsored project that the external partner would provide a fee to sponsor what goes on in the class. And, you know, that raises some concerns among some faculty about, you know, the corporatization of higher ed. But what I've come to discover and understand better in just my few months of working at the Hurt Hub is how misplaced that concern really is, that the corporations of the small companies mostly, but some big ones that want to work with us are enriching their own experience as company owners or as people who are running labs. We work with somebody in an innovation lab in that sort of space. And so it's a learning process for them. It's almost like they get to go back to school without having to actually go back to school. and so there's benefit all around. And right now in today's economy, the most important thing for the companies is building their pipeline and recruiting. So they are happy to have the opportunity to work with students and get to see what they're capable of in this kind of setting, and by the way, get a lot of exposure to students so that the word gets out that this is a great place to work. They have really interesting problems, you know, just like me being surprised when I discovered biology mm-hmm. and all the interesting problems that are available. I think students are going to be surprised when they discover some of these companies that do the kinds of things they do, you know, with B Corps and, you know, all the kind of social good that's done in companies today that I don't think students are really aware of. In fact, I don't think faculty are aware of either. So getting that word out is going to be an important part of my job.
Tell me a little bit about what you think students today are capable of. I think they have so many more resources than ever before, so many more opportunities than ever before. What are you excited to see from them? What are you encouraged by?
Well, I think my interest in how companies are doing more social good is one of the best matches to what I also see in students. And this has been a long tradition at Davidson of civic engagement, and our tagline is, you know, lives of leadership and service, that's a big part of who we are at Davidson. But I think that's a generational shift that we're seeing now in students everywhere. they really want to do something that matters. And they're, you know, making money is less important to students now than I think it maybe has ever been in my lifetime. I think that their awareness of the world around them is much greater. And then really seeking a way to add to it, to do something meaningful with their lives. And, just like in my own story, once you realize that you have that opportunity, a whole new world opens up to you. So I see that in our students now.
How proud are you and excited are you that you're able to provide those opportunities at Davidson?
Oh, it's just incredible. The opportunity to work at the Hurt Hub is not something I ever dreamed of, but it is becoming a dream come true for me to see what our students are capable of, and to go back to your earlier comment about what are they capable of. I can give a good example. A program that we do is called 3-Day Startup, and our students are engaged for 19 hours, and they come in with presumably no idea what they're going to do, and they brainstorm what are the problems in the world today, what problems need to be solved that we want to attack. They come up with business ideas of how to solve those problems. They pitch those ideas and then spend the rest of their time working on a solution and trying to form the basis of a company, essentially, mm-hmm. with mentors and so forth. They come up with a pretty complete business plan that they pitch on the last day. And to watch how they worked, you know, the teamwork, the communication, the collaboration, the creativity was exactly what we're trying to get our students to exhibit in the classes that we teach. And so to see them transfer all those skills into this new area and in that short amount of time be able to come up with these amazing, great ideas that might even be businesses, you know, by the time they graduate or shortly after, is just a big thrill.
It's very cool and it's very exciting. And I am constantly, every interview I do, I talk to people who tell me about what their students or their faculty are working on. And it never ceases to amaze me, the kind of innovations that are happening.
Yeah, there is a lot.
Oh, it's very cool. And I love what you're doing at the Hurt Hub. And I can't wait to see what comes next. This gig hub idea, I think, is it's really on trend with what a lot of people are doing in terms of, you know, skill-based and proficiency-based learning. And I think the Hurt Hub is on the cutting edge of this new thing.
Absolutely. I think because of our unique position, or relatively unique, there aren't many of these kinds of centers associated with a liberal arts college.
Right.
And we have a little niche in that market that I think we can come up with some ideas that are going to be transferred much more broadly.
It's definitely exciting, and I can't wait to see it. We always end our Ed Trends interviews with a quick lightning round. How do you feel? You up for it?
I think so.
Okay. All right, let's jump in. First question. In the last year, what is a book you've read that you've really enjoyed?
I am just finishing The Undoing Project by mm-hmm. Michael Lewis. Mm-hmm. And I know it's been around a while, but I just got to it and I've really enjoyed that.
What about podcasts? Are you a podcast listener?
Not so much. Occasional.
Okay. All right. What about music? What's your favorite artist? Who is your favorite artist, or what's on your go-to playlist?
So I love all music, but my go-to is Americana, mm-hmm. and we have a great Americana festival here near us. So I take a break from whatever I'm doing and spend those 4 days listening to music. And one of my favorites is Guy Clark. He's one of the best songwriters ever. So I've got most of his music on my playlist.
Nice. Okay, so that leads me to a good next question. What is your favorite thing to do outside of work? If you're not, you know, innovating all day long, what are you doing?
Well, I like to cook, mm-hmm. and I walk my dog, mm-hmm. and do a little bit of handcrafting work, like crochet and that sort of thing.
Nice. What kind of dog do you have?
Well, he's a rescue. He is all hound, but who knows what kinds.
Yeah, I have a rescue too. It's like, who knows what this is? It doesn't matter.
His name is Mendel, which reflects something about his genetic history.
Nice. Okay, what is your go-to snack or a guilty pleasure?
Well, does a guilty pleasure have to be
It doesn't
food?
Have to be food. It could be anything.
Well, okay, I have to say the guilty pleasure is chocolate.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a pretty popular one.
Yeah.
Okay, what inspires you?
You know, my students inspire me. I had an experience just yesterday. It was the last day of class, and I ended in a way that I've never done before, probably influenced by the new job that I have at the Herd Hub. We made a list of everything that they had learned, so we, you know, some learning outcomes that were expected. But they talked a lot about the meta skills, the soft skills, the things that I spoke about earlier, that they had learned those things from the class. And then I had them list the things that they could turn into resume bullets. What were things that they could actually talk to an employer about? That conversation was one of the most inspiring, motivating conversations I've had in a long time in a class. I can't wait to teach my next class and have a similar conversation at the end.
What were some of the things they were saying?
Well, they talked about communication and teamwork that they had never had to pull together. We did a big class-wide project, and it required them to pull together what different teams had done into one whole. And they thought that was something that they would see in their future, that kind of scale of teamwork, and that had been a great experience for them. They realized that when I said at the beginning how important communication was in that kind of setting, that it was real. They had, you know, some miscommunications along the way that they had to make up for later on. And so, you know, I took a picture of it. It was so inspiring to me, but I don't have access to the picture right now. So there was communication, teamwork, pulling things together. Oh, they talked about learning on their own, that they had learned, several of them had to go read documentation for an API, for something that someone else had written that they had to figure out how to use. Mm-hmm. And that was an important skill that they felt they had picked up from this project.
That's awesome. All right, last question. What is the best piece of advice you've ever gotten or a piece of advice you would like to leave the audience with?
I've gotten a lot of great advice in my time, and I'm sort of known for giving unsolicited advice to a lot of students. And, you know, I don't have that encapsulated in my favorite piece of advice, but I would like to use a quote. And in fact, I have two quotes that they both inspire me and their advice. So maybe it's an answer to two of your questions. One is, go confidently in the direction of your dreams. Live the life you've imagined. This is attributed to Thoreau, although it's not an exact Thoreau quote. And it reflects what I learned in my winding journey of going into industry and realizing that wasn't for me. And, you know, thinking I was going to study one thing and finding out that, no, my real calling was somewhere else. That if you're looking for your passion, you're following your heart, that, you know, good things will happen. And the other is also maybe not actually said by Churchill, but I watched The Darkest Hour recently, and the quote, success is not final, failure is not fatal, it's the courage to continue that counts. Mm-hmm. And so sticking with things, just never give up. That success will come and it will go. Failure will come and it will go. And life goes on.
I love that. Lori, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed the conversation and learning what you guys are doing at the Herd Hub and at Davidson in general. I think it's exciting and I can't wait to see what comes next.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.